Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's going on, guys?
And today we have wonderful
Not much,
Jimmy,
man.
Jimmy Wong.
Hey.
How's it going?
You know, things are going on right now. I'm hanging out. I'm ready to talk some artifacts.
So, crazy thing, it is a new year right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It is 2015.
Nice.
There are magic spoilers that we haven't looked at yet because...
Fate Reforged, guys.
So, we are recording this before Christmas.
Yep.
But we're doing it ahead of time because there's going to be some traveling and
Wait,
people
Alex,
not in town.
You're going a little over my head here. You're saying it's January right now?
It's January right now. Like, everyone that hears you speaking right now is in January.
Wow.
They're in the future.
This is like Terminator 2 right now. This is how Skynet. That's what this
exciting.
Is.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I guess right now I am so happy that it's 2015 and I have New Year's resolutions.
I got really cool presents for Christmas. My parents are divorced, so I get double Christmas.
Wow, okay.
And I'm Jewish, so I also get Hanukkah.
I was going to say, we're not recording this before Christmas, but we are in the middle of Hanukkah.
Today is the second night of Hanukkah,
yeah.
To give you an exact location.
But today
of where
is not
right
the second night of Hanukkah.
No, I mean,
it is January.
Day two of Hanukkah. Very similar to day two of a Grand Prix.
Really?
Really?
How's that?
No, it's not related
no,
at all.
I mean,
I was hoping for
I guess
a
the EV
fun...
is really high. You just get stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
So today we are going to be doing the top 10 artifacts. So a couple weeks ago we did...
Of Modern. Yes, and
in
I'm here to be the card reader slash provide the EDH picks for each of them because we also did this on our podcast.
Right, and so kind of what our plan is we did the top 10 red cards in Modern, and we're going to do a series of the best colors, and then we're going to shuffle it with a series of best types of permanents. So eventually we'll do top 10 enchantments, top 10 red cards, and we'll move our way down the line of top 10
Well, you did
stuff.
Top 10 red cards.
And we probably will make use of, like, top 10 uses of Grand Architect at some point. But
right. One
That'll
day,
be your July 4th, or I mean your April 1st episode. That'd be good. I'd listen to it.
After that, because, you know, it's the new year, we want to get it started on the right foot, we're going to do just a brew. Because right now, it's up in the air, because the ban list might happen, Fate Reforged cards are
That's
coming out
right
now, so who knows what Modern's going
to
look like.
And I want to tell you guys, even if you start to get annoyed at all with this list, please listen to the brew, because it's my favorite brew, honestly, that I've
we've
ever...
We've mentioned it before.
Yeah,
is Hunted Handsome.
We mentioned it in passing, but we've never actually
Hunted
broken it
handsome.
Down.
I thought you guys forgot the letter A, and it was supposed to be some kind of, like, you know, like... I don't know, tribal, haunted, vampire,
oh,
cool
no, no,
deck.
Oh, no, It's the haunted horror. Well, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
It's about
Spoilers.
As fun of a deck as I've ever gotten to play at a Grand Prix. I played this deck at a Grand Prix, so I cannot wait to tell you guys about it. Let's get into our list.
That's well, before we get started, I do want to mention, while you were listening right now in the future from our past, please tweet at us. We love hearing what you guys are thinking while you're listening to us. If we say something stupid, please yell at us for being dumb. We don't like our self-esteem, so we
Admonish
need to be told how bad we are at Magic.
True. We make rules mistakes all the time on the Command Zone, and sometimes we're just in the middle of like a two-hour podcast, and we just drop something that...
Oh, I mean, I would be tweeting your mistakes continuously if I didn't just listen to what I'm driving, and that would get myself killed. But
Thanks. Raising the self-esteem of us. But it's true, yeah. Tweet at us, and tweet at you guys, too, because it is important to boost your Twitter following.
Right.
Also,
we are the MMcast.
Yes, and if you guys are doing subscribing to this on iTunes, positive reviews also help out a lot. Or just any kind of constructive thing you have to say. Just having reviews helps boost the... visibility of the podcast as well.
If you're listening
Even just
to it,
one,
you want
honestly.
Other people to listen to it so that everyone listens to
That's
it.
That's right. You could have the honor of being the first person to review this podcast.
You like
Maybe I'm
going
to go do that
cool.
right after this podcast so I get that honor.
Be excellent.
So, now we're going to get to our top 10 list.
And a forewarning, do not get offended by these top 10 lists if they do not include your favorite pet artifact, because they're by no means definitive. They're just done by two chumps named Alex and Ben.
Whoa, my list is definitive.
And in fact, if you are offended, please tweet me immediately and tell me why your card is better than mine because
yeah.
I might
60 characters or less.
I just might agree with you.
That's true. That's true.
So number 10,
Aether Vial. Want to remind everyone what this does?
So no, that's your job.
Oh yeah, it's true. It is my job. Hold on, let me pull that up. Alex, delete all this stuff too. Aether Vial. I actually just played this in the holiday keep today.
Aether Vial.
Aether Vial, a one-drop artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a charge counter on Aether Vial, and you can tap this at any time to put a creature card with converted mana cost equal to the number of charge counters on Aether Vial from your hand onto the battlefield.
So I want to explain why it's number 10 instead of below.
let me
if
just
Ben really wants to talk.
I just need to cut you off because it's super important. Okay. So what happened on my list is the Aether Vial was also incidentally my number 10 card.
Really?
Oh.
But
it was not mine.
It was Aether Vial slash another card because they both fill the same spot in my mind.
Okay.
The other card is Isochron Scepter. And if you have that on your list later.
It's not on my list, not even on my honorable mentions.
The reason that I put them both on the list together is they're from the same block. They're functionally very similar in the sense that players that played with them in Standard love them. They're very powerful within their strategies, but they don't see a huge amount of modern play.
Well, my
and if you
reason
read,
for 10 is, and it was almost kicked off, is that, you know, Aether Vial is super powerful in older formats. In Legacy and Vintage, it's one of the staple cards of those formats. Most of the creature-based decks play them. I think it's a card that one day will be much more powerful in Modern than it maybe is right now. And I think its main limitation is just, like, counter spells aren't as good as they normally would be. So the need to be able to charge out threats that way. But it does see a significant amount of play in Merfolk. And Merfolk is at least a tier 2 deck in the format and does see a significant amount of play, especially when, not right now, where it's combo winter or fall.
Yeah.
But when, you know, Modern kind of settles again, Merfolk will be back and always be on the fringe. And I think Aether Vial is like the staple card for that deck.
So to point out what Isochron Scepter does really fast, Isochron Scepter is an artifact. Would you like to pull this one up,
John? Oh, I got you. Isochron Scepter is a 2-drop artifact. It has imprint. When it enters the battlefield, you may exile an instant card with converted mana cost 2 or less from your hand. You can pay 2 and tap Isochron Scepter to copy the exiled card. If you do, you may cast the copy without paying its mana cost.
So Isochron Scepter is another card similar to Aether Vial. It's probably seen a little less play in Modern, but it has seen play before in Delver decks. There was a red, white, blue Delver deck that played it for a long time. The common uses are you put in a Lightning Bolt or a Lightning Helix on it.
It's, I think historically its biggest use was in Old Extended.
Yes.
When it was used with Fire and Ice, so you can kind of get the versatility of either getting the tap and down something and draw a card or just burn a creature out. It has seen, I think, the deck that it's the biggest staple in is actually Turbo Fog, which isn't really a deck in the Modern format, but does exist. And that's because, like, you can put any of the fogs on it because they're all instant speed.
Angel Song, and it just locks
people out, or Silence fully locks the player out. So it definitely sees play in that deck, and we'll probably talk about that deck at some point in the future. But that is a much more of a fringe strategy, and then I guess it may have saw some play in Geist or like Blue White Delver decks back in the day.
So yeah, there was definitely a deck I believe that won like a couple of online PTQs right before PTQ season, maybe a couple years ago. And it was a red white blue Delver deck, and it was playing this card, and everybody got all, you know, up in arms about it for a little while, and it got popular. The thing about this card, the reason
like
I wanted to bring it up, because if you think about it, there's uses that are very powerful that people just forget about. Like if you can just resolve like say a Boomerang on a Isochron Scepter, you're at such, like, for the rest of the game, you have Capsize with Buyback for 2 mana.
Right.
And that's such a hard place for a lot of players to get out of that it is worth noting and mentioning. And I wanted to just include both as my 10 slot because to me, they're very kind of similar.
So you
sense.
Cheated.
Well, I do it again later.
Dirty
so
cheater.
Let's move on.
All right. Well, Jimmy, what's the EDH commander number 10?
For me, it was Skull Clamp.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Well, definitely a very powerful card.
I'm actually surprised that wasn't number one.
It should be number one.
I guess it's Soul Ring, but number two.
I had a very specific number one that I think affects more. Because Skull Clamp, there are some decks that may not necessarily need it.
Right.
Because it definitely shines in token decks.
So Skull Clamp's just bonkers banned.
Of course it's bonkers banned.
It's been banned in every format, I think, but Vintage and EDH.
Yep. And that's why I can play it, and I will play it anytime I can. And Josh's number 10 was the Staff of Domination.
Combo Heaven.
Combo Heaven, yeah. So definitely already off to a pretty solid start about what cards
I'm actually surprised Staff doesn't play, you see, no play, because there is in Elf decks a combo that you can just go infinite with it pretty easily.
Right, untapping.
Just because you just need one creature that makes enough mana, and Elves has a few of those.
It's one of those combo cards that combo decks struggle to want to play it, I think, because it's so mana intensive.
Right.
It's kind of bad if you don't go infinite with it. So.
Right.
But, anyway, Skull Clamp would be awesome. If it was in Modern, I would play it all the time.
All right, so number 9. My number 9 is Relic of Progenitus.
So weird. That's also my number nine.
Yes.
Really?
How did that happen?
Hey, you guys are on the same page. This is going to be a short podcast.
It's like mind melding right now.
Well, the thing with 10 and 9, I think the reason is this actually sees a significant amount of play, but it's also kind of a sideboard card. It's a main deck card.
I can see this.
Decks played in the main. Like either like Tron decks fully just blatantly played in the main, and then on top of that, nowadays, because of the Delve cards and because of cards like Tarmogoyf, Snapcatcher Mage, it sees some play main deck generally.
Yeah.
And it's just Relic
of Progenitus is a one drop artifact, very low costed as well. You can tap it to make a target player exile a card from his or her graveyard, or you can pay one to exile the Relic of Progenitus, and you exile all cards from all graveyards. And the whammer, the most important part to me, draw a card.
Right. Well, that's why Tron plays it. It's kind of their cantrip for value, and it just like gets rid of Tarmogoyf for at least, if not immediately, for a while, because you can do it in response to them doing something and then just kill it into a block or something. But like it really just it's a versatile card, and having cantrip on a card just adds so much value to any effect.
It's a really, really good card. I mean, it's definitely the reason that it made my list was because it can be played. It's one of these effects that every color wants, but ultimately not every color historically has gotten graveyard hate. That's good.
Right.
And so you can cycle this. It's just good. Every color wants to be able to play.
And I kind of included this as my favorite. There are a few of these low cost artifact graveyard removal spells.
Yeah.
And I think the one that might be the most contentious and the one I argued with maybe putting instead was Grafdigger's Cage.
Yeah.
Because it's just so much more strong against pod decks. But I felt like Relic is a main deck card just around the board and many more decks, and just in general is played more because of that card draw effect. And
yeah, just definitely.
Tormod's Crypt.
There's Nile Spellbomb. Yeah. Yeah. There's other cards that do, but this ultimately for the cost, for what it does, for drawing you a card, it's the most versatile and goes in every deck. So
yeah. Like, I wish it was in standard right now, man. All those Sidisi Whip decks.
Oh yeah. Well, Tormod's Crypt, which is
come on, that thing is not draw.
Talaria West can search for it. So
and Alex loves Talaria West.
Number 9 for the EDH side of things would be Gilded Lotus from me. I think the ultimate big fatty of making mana, plus it's any color. And then for Josh, it would be the combo of the altars, Phyrexian and Ashnod's Altar. Both of which you can sack creatures to it to create either two colorless mana in Ashnod's Altar's case, and one color mana of any choice with Phyrexian Altar.
Well, both the altars are not legal, but very strong cards, and if they were, would probably see some out of play.
I mean, really, I think the idea between that would just be, it would be quote-unquote sack outlet.
Right.
And the best of the sack outlets, we think, are the ones that create more mana for EDH.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Well,
very
free mana
ideas.
Is good.
Yeah, exactly. As is the Lotus, and you know, ramp is a huge part of artifacts.
So, yeah, that's... it's good. They're very, very, very good cards. Exactly. I wish we could play them in Modern. Once again, we can't.
Just saying, we're having a little more fun over here.
At least Gilded Lotus is legal. I've never seen it played in Modern.
I think I've seen Travis Wu try and play it. Travis Wu, someone who's famous for coming out with crazy brews.
Yeah.
So next, number 8. Do you want to go with number 8 this time first? Or
I'll lead. Crucible of Worlds. One of my favorite cards ever. And so similar to like when I had my opinions about the red list we did, this is one of the cards that virtually sees no play in Modern. I mean, I think when Aggroloam, it'll see Aggroloam play sometimes.
There are a few decks that like have it in sideboard as plans against Tron, or it's a decent sideboard card. I actually have it in my honorable mentions. I think it's a card that is vastly powerful that just... doesn't have the right land card or the right home to kind of see play in.
Well, that's why. Right. And so that's why this is the similar thing that I was talking about with the red list, where I notice a card that is so powerful and is so unique and does something that nothing else can do, and does create your ability to get value out of a card type that doesn't often get value. So cards like Horizon Canopy, or even just like if you can set up a situation where you can just ghost quarter somebody repeatedly, because they don't have enough basics in their deck. You know, I mean. There's definitely uses for this card. Nobody seems to be able to figure out the best one. It's a super powerful card, though.
Right.
It's just a 3-drop artifect for those that you don't know that you just lets you play lands from your graveyard.
Right. Which, like, the effect
it
that...
It seems like it needs too much of a setup cost, and that turn and that time spent in Modern would be much better used otherwise normally.
Well, so the things you use it for are, like, the decks that probably make the best advantage are decks that use strip mine effects. So, like, famous one is Ghost Quarter.
Yeah.
So, like... where you can cycle through their deck, and if you have the lockdown effects of like what Hate Bears kind of does, where it makes it so your opponents can't search their library, you can kind of start just straight up strip mining them. Or, you know, Tectonic Edge or like other cards. Like there needs to be a land that comes into play and gains you value, or when it leaves play gains you value. And that's what Crucible does the best in. And that a land that is powerful enough for that hasn't been printed, or it's too inconsistent of an effect to count on.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think the reason it appeals to EDH players, and this was also one of our honorable mentions, is that it feels very built around me.
Well, in EDH also strip mine is legal, which is just like Ghost Quarter doesn't work like strip mine. Like strip mine is a stupid card that is shouldn't be ever been printed, but with Crucible can just straight out kill opponents.
It's true.
Versus Ghost Quarter, which like is cute and like is very strong against some decks like Valakut if you don't have locks out, and but then it needs actual locks to kind of make
it
happen.
Right.
Number eight for us was it's a rehash. It was I said the altars and Josh said Skull Clamp.
Okay, so we've covered them.
Yeah, yeah. So my number eight.
Oh, right.
Skipped
me.
Way to go,
Jimmy.
We skipped you because I don't...
Wong is taking over the cast right now.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Modern Zone. It's your host, Jimmy.
My number eight is Wurmcoil Engine.
Number eight. By the way, Wurmcoil Engine is a 6-drop artifact worm, and it has Death Touch and Lifelink, and when it dies, it spawns two little babies, one of them a 3/3 colorless worm artifact with Death Touch, and the other has Lifelink.
It's
so it goes from a 6/6 yeah. to 2/3.
By babies, Jimmy means it gets tokens. There are no babies.
Physical babies.
It recreates itself in the two forms of itself, but halved.
So this is kind of the staple fatty out of Tron. And on top of that, it's so powerful when it lands the battlefield. I mean, based off of Ben's reaction, I think he has it much higher than I do. But, you play it, once it's in the battlefield, it completely dominates the game. It's a little expensive. It's arguably the best of the seven titans, or six titans. Maybe not as good as...
Oh, they were released in the same...
No, it wasn't. It was released literally 2 months later.
Gotcha.
So the original titans were released in M13, 12...
11.
11. 11. And then, yeah,
Scars
11.
Of
and then
after.
Scars of Mirrodin comes out and Wurmcoil Engine was printed. And the joke was that they're all like the same family because they're just big 6-drops that gain so much value when they come into play.
Which is why when M15, when they printed the soul of cards, they actually made a colorless one this time.
Right, as opposed to the soul of New Phyrexia. Yeah. So, Ben, why do you love this card? Or do you want to talk about when we get it to the head of the list?
Wurmcoil Engine?
Yeah.
Why do I love it? I love this card. I mean, it's obvious. How would you not love this card? We talked about recently how life gain was bad for a long time, and then they printed two cards within the span of one block that both had similar effects that were both, and I will get to the other one maybe later, but this one is, it's 6/6. First of all, in just a colorless 6/6 for 6 that has Death Touch and Lifelink, even without the other ability, that's probably not modern playable, but it's already very good. The fact that when it dies, you get two other creatures out of it is totally...
It's resistant to removal. It's kind of the perfect control card because you can play it, and then even if they deal with it somehow, you are still ahead because you have a Death Touch and Lifelink 3/3.
It's just like a bananas card.
Right.
It also
it demands removal three times in a row.
And the interesting, we haven't talked about Tron yet. Maybe. Because this is the future.
But things are shaking in the future.
The fact that they can get it out on turn 3 with the Urzatron lands
in
Tron decks is what makes it so dangerous in the format, where it's like a threat of a turn 3 6/6 lifelink death touch in even if you kill it comes back with more value is so deadly that it's definitely one of the top 10 artifacts.
It's
a
3-for-1 almost every single time
right.
you play it, unless they can exile it or remove it some other way.
So next on the list, I'm going to go back to the original order. Number 7, I have Arcbound Ravager.
Ooh, a 2-drop artifact creature that's 0/0, but it has modular 1, so it comes into play with a +1/+1 counter in it. And when it dies, you can move those +1/+1 counters to any one creature target artifact creature. But the big one is you can sacrifice a artifact and put a +1/+1 counter on Arcbound Ravager.
Right, so, this is the big daddy affinity card. This is the face of the deck. We talked about the deck, in the first episode of this podcast. That's how we opened up the, Masters of Modern was with Arcbound Ravager.
Mm-hmm.
This guy just lets you, in affinity decks, lets you win out of nowhere and makes any card you have, any attacker, a super big threat. It makes every little land card, everything into, just damage that is impossible to get through and can just, if an opponent taps out, you're just dead because this card's in the play.
It's super, super good. I'm not going to reveal where Wurmcoil was on my list. We'll get to it when we get to it. This is also on my list, of course.
Right.
This, for me, is number 6.
Okay.
So this would be my next card.
Okay.
But, I agree. I think Ravager, and I looked at Ravager because the other obvious card that would be in Affinity, I don't know if this is on your list, is Cranial Plating. That's the other one that's of the two.
It's on my list.
Okay. So what you said is the face of Affinity. So, going a step further.
Right. Well, I was thinking the face of Affinity because it's a creature that has a face.
So
but Cranial Plating is someone's head, and it's... I'm just kidding.
So in terms of power
the
level...
Hat, the crown of Affinity. Crown jewel.
You guys know that from last time how kind of averse to including cards that have a narrow purpose in a powerful deck, which I'm just contradicted by putting Crucible on my list.
Right.
But how I don't like putting Splinter Twin on my list because I think it's a bad card without the combo, which I know is... That's a hard... I can debate that all day. But the thing is, with this card, I'm like, even if I'm not in Affinity, this is one of the most efficient artifact sac outlets that's ever been printed.
Oh, yeah.
And yep. They're very rare, is the thing. I love artifacts. It's my favorite card type. I am constantly trying to build decks that take advantage of any number of bad cards that are artifacts. I mean, just constantly. And this is one of the cards that you always come back to, and you're like, well, I'm not really... you meant Grand Architect, I'm assuming.
I 100% meant Grand Architect. Damn it, joke
you're
ruined.
Cutting that out too, Alex.
Grand Architect.
But yeah, so this is, it's good as a creature, it's good in Affinity, but it's also, they constantly will print value artifacts that if they go to the graveyard, something happens, and this is always going to be one of the most efficient ways to take advantage of that.
Do people play Mirror Retriever in Modern?
No.
Come on, it'd be sweet. Get all that recursion.
Yeah, but it costs 2 mana, and like their 2 mana threats are this and cards that win the game when like they like, attack with them.
It's not really good enough, but I do think that Ravager, as well as being outside of Affinity, it can be played. Like you people will find uses for this card that are not just Affinity.
Right, and you know, it's the reason I put it, it's not number 1, 2, or 3 is because I think it is a little less, you know, it is just Affinity is pretty much the main deck that it's playing. I think that, as you said, a great sac outlet for artifacts, really important. I also just think it's one of the reasons that deck has been dominant since the beginning of the deck.
Agreed. It's one of the most important cards.
That's why I like my big daddy Greater Gargadon. That's my favorite sac outlet.
I love it. We talked about Gargadon the last one. It was on my honorable mentions. I love Gargadon.
That's a good guy.
My number 7 is Batterskull.
Batterskull.
And I don't know if you have Batterskull on your list, but
how could you not?
There later.
I'm surprised this wasn't actually on our EDH list, but Batterskull is a 5-drop artifact living weapon equipment. So when it comes on the battlefield, you equip it to a 0/0 black germ creature. And equipped creature gets +4/+4, has vigilance and lifelink.
We should just have you read every card in Magic's history, and we'll just have a soundboard that we can play you.
Yeah, that's right.
In our other
episodes. Like, you'll be like, living weapon. When this equipment enters the battlefield.
Let's pencil you in for that recording next week.
Right. Okay, I'll see you guys. Doing 20 years plus of cards.
You
okay,
and
great.
Diesel.
We'll cover
reading like the dumbest commons from
Homelands.
We also need
in other languages.
Yeah. We'll cover starter. We'll cover starter and Portal 1 next week.
Oh gosh. Batterskull also importantly has an ability where it can pay 3 and return it to its owner's hand, so it is resilient to removal and it costs 5 to equip, but really you're not going to be equipping this too often.
Well, so fun story about Batterskull that like I may have mentioned on the episode, a previous episode, but Batterskull was changed last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Originally what it was a 5 for the germ, 4/4 lifelink, all of that business. But instead of 3 to return it to your hand, it was 8 to create a new germ token that was already equipped to.
Oh, interesting.
So originally when it was printed,
it
would just be 5 and 5, mm-hmm. and then you would just pay 8 mana to make a new germ token that it's already attached to. They changed last minute because they didn't think it was good enough. Not realizing, now it makes this indestructible threat that you can't get rid of. Especially at the time, a combination with Stoneforge Mystic just makes it, like, undefeatable.
Right.
It flashes in at instant speed, uncounterable, and on top of that, can't be killed.
Right. It's called the Stoneblade deck or something?
In Legacy, it's called Stoneblade. Yeah. In Standard, it was Cawblade.
The hilarious part of that is that, like, when it was in Standard, and this was one of the few times
in
history.
This was in Standard?
Yeah.
Like,
no.
Stoneforge Mystic and Batterskull.
And Jace the Mind Sculptor. Like, it's one of the few times in Magic's history that in the middle of a Standard season, Wizards banned multiple cards.
Right,
they banned Jace and Stoneforge Mystic.
For
right?
the record, the time before that happened was when Arcbound Ravager was in Standard and it was with all of his friends.
Yeah, you guys just had a lot of fun.
Batterskull
was
You could play a deck that actually legitimately played Stoneforge Mystic, Batterskull, Jace the Mind Sculptor, and Mana Leak in Standard. That was a
and
thing.
Ponder and Preordain at the same time.
It was so unfair.
I think actually the deck eventually evolved to like
by Siege Rhino now.
Right. Like Splinter Twin and Kiki Jiki.
Inquisition
was
of Kozilek was in the deck.
Yeah.
People called it Darkblade. They play like dresses. It was like so crazy.
Literally legacy decks for the most part, or like decks that would be too good to be played in Modern.
Right.
Existed in Standard.
That
at
was
one
the
point.
Season that I was playing Standard Grand Architect, and I took it to a Standard PTQ, and I beat 2 Cobblade decks that tournament.
Congratulations.
It is the season.
So, on to, one of the reasons Batterskull is just so dominant is, like we mentioned, it's an indestructible threat. Once you get in play in Modern, it's much more of a control card
because
control wants threats that it can rely on, and you can play it. And as long as you play it at 8 mana, they're not going to be able to kill it.
Right.
Even if they try killing it, you gain the card advantage.
It kind of has that Pearl-like Ancient thing going
right,
for it.
Exactly.
But this has vigilance and lifelink.
And you can play it for 5, and it'll just save you out of games if you needed to.
Right.
If you're playing against the deck that doesn't have Artifact Hate, you can you know, just kind of play it out there and start winning very quickly. Vigilance is good, so it's defensive and aggressive. It's just all does really everything a control deck would ever want it to do.
Yeah. It's very, very good. It's four toughness as well, which makes killing it the first time resilient to Lightning Bolt. It gets around path.
Abrupt Decay kills the germ, but you can get it back.
Now, I've definitely played this card in multiple formats, and what I find is that as good of a card as it is, it's cumbersome and slow to like, if they do remove the token or something. Let's say I've bounced the token before and I've gone against it. It does kind of take a second to get the thing back online. It's a lot of mana, and it's a little slow, and you can get around it. It's just a pain to get around.
Right. And if it's something they can keep doing and you have to keep drawing answers for, chances are they're going to be coming out on top.
Right. Especially if they're being I'll just say where I have it. I have it as my number four.
Okay.
So it's pretty high. I honestly think it's, like, when we were talking, we talked about before this, it was like, there's four or five actual powerful artifacts, and then there's, like, 5 to 10 more, like, role players. I think this is one of the five powerful.
Actually powerful? Right. That's interesting. I mean, I obviously, my positioning of the two cards is like a little switch.
Right,
basically,
right.
Wormcoil, I have the same kind of idea, but I was thinking Wormcoil is more powerful. I mean, they have their pluses and their minuses. We can
well,
debate Wormcoil that all
day. Wormcoil has a definitive home.
And Batterskull,
Batterskull is just in every sideboard that needs it. But I think Batterskull sees more play in more decks.
Yes.
Because Tron is not as much more as popular a deck as something like Blue White Red.
Yes.
All right, and of course I have to put my opinion in here because it matters, guys. Number 7 for Jimmy's top 10 of Commander Artifacts, Cauldron of Souls.
It's awesome.
I don't even know what that does.
it's the 5-mana persist one from Shadowmoor.
Oh, all creatures that persist.
No, you get to choose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you could essentially, it's like the anti-board wipe. It has this amazing, I'll read the exact text here. You can tap it to choose any number of target creatures, and each of those creatures gains persist until end of turn. So in Commander, when you're constantly getting wiped, or you want to do something political, you could potentially even save someone else's stuff on the other side of the table if you want it to come back.
Right.
So there's a lot of politicking involved with that. And for Josh, it was the Soul of New Phyrexia, for a very similar reason that it protects you from board wipes in the bin as well.
Okay.
I think Soul of New Phyrexia is awesome, by the way. I don't think it's modern playable, but
I don't think it's definitely... Yeah, it's definitely... It's a commander-only card.
Yeah, well, I have thought before, we always mentioned it off the cuff, there's this format we play, Highlander Roulette, but it's a 100-card, one-on-one competitive format with no commander, just 20 life. And I've thought before about, like, tribal decks, like, I was going to build a Slivers deck... And I was thinking, as a 6-drop in any number of like multicolored kind of aggressive decks, I don't think that this would be the worst card in the world to play.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's
it's an auto win for like probably 80% of the decks I build, just because you need to have protection.
Yeah.
Always use protection, kids. All right, moving on. Number 6 for you, Kessler.
Number 6. Now this is one of my favorite cards. It is Spellskite.
What? Yeah. Spellskite's your number 6?
Yeah.
What the heck's
so
your number
powerful.
One?
Oh, is your Spellskite number 6? or number 1?
I'm not going to get into my list until we get down the list.
All right,
Spellskite
is number 6. So
two
Spellskite,
drop.
Yeah.
It's a 0/4 artifact creature horror, and for 1 Phyrexian mana, you can pay it either with 2 life or with blue, so you can literally play this in any deck. Change a target of target spell or ability to Spellskite.
So this is such a powerful card. I mean, what it really does is just protects things. That's its initial value. But in Modern, there are a few decks that also just completely dominates. Like, Noggles can't beat this card.
What is
Splinter
that
Splinter Swin has
Kessler,
a huge...
I'm going to step in front of you here. Right. This is my number one card. So I'm going to take lead talk about this. I'm not going to let you steal my thunder on this.
Yeah,
because this
go.
Is...
Take the thunder.
Yeah. So, Spellskite. It's not just good against the format. I've played multiple decks in Modern Brews where Spellskite's a 4-of in the main deck. Like, it's so good. It's so good. It
blocks things.
Any creature based deck where you're playing a really, really important threat, it protects. Half the decks in the format can't get through it without they need to remove it. I mean, it can be played in any color. You can pay 2 life to redirect. Like, what card in Modern goes in more decks than this one card that's an artifact? What card goes into more decks? This is in almost every single deck sideboard is at least 3 of, and you can play it. You can
Lightning Bolt, but
this is not colorless.
That's true.
But it goes in more decks.
What artifact? There is no artifact you can think of in Modern that is going to see more play in more decks that you could actually justify playing in the main deck. In Hunted Handsome, a fantastic deck.
Spellskite is a pretty good card. It's
so
one that
good.
I always want to get for EDH, but the price tag on it makes me go, counterspell.
I mean, so what it comes down to, it shuts down many decks. It's very strong. It blocks. It's one of the best defensive cards in the format.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah, having a 0/4 body for 2 is also very handy.
It's not as relevant sometimes because there are not that many aggressive decks on the ground, because Affinity is the main aggressive deck, its blocking ability is important, but not... If you're playing it as a blocker, it's not the strongest card you could be playing in the slot. Right. But what it's good against is stealing. Like, there are so many target effects in the format that from it stops... It's like a counter to the Lightning Bolt, as I just mentioned, the most played card in the format.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On top of it also can steal Splinter Twin, so Splinter Twin can't beat you through it.
Right.
Noggles, which is the enchantment hexproof deck... All of its threats, you just, like, they can't beat it. They literally, you shut them down and you can just beat them while it's in play.
Also, it can steal Arcbound Ravager modular tokens when you Zac that card. Yeah. You try to put it, and it's, like, trying to target with modular. You can just steal them and put them on spells. This card is in the top three Magic cards ever printed. Just kidding.
Better than Mox's.
Can we equip Batterskull to it?
Yeah, I have. I have many times. It's
4/8.
You can't steal other people equipping though, because you can only equip targeting your. You can only stuff. Equip, so you can't do anything that can't target it.
Gotcha.
So like if you're doing like destroy target, like go for the throat, you can't redirect it to Spellskite because go for the throat only kills non-artifact creatures.
This card houses burn decks. Burn decks like. Oh my goodness! When you play against like a Boros deck or something like that, they're trying.
They can't get thrown on the ground or.
Oh my god! Yeah. I mean, they play all of their targeted removal. You can make at the very 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 least
take two
damage.
Cards.
Right,
right. Or if you can pay for it, you can just it's just crazy. This card's so good. Anyway.
So what's your number? Your number six, Ben.
We talked about my number six already was Ravager.
Okay, so we can move on. Or what's the commander?
Everyone
six?
Always seems to forget about the commander kids over here.
I hope I wasn't too passionate just there for you.
No, that's perfect. My number six was Lightning Greaves.
Great card.
Great card. Yeah. Actually, that was on my like original writing down every good card that's legal in modern list.
Oh, thank goodness that this is legal.
Right. Well, so if I were to play it, the deck that I've always brewed in my head and have never took into a tournament, and I don't know if I would, is the...
Sovereigns of Lost Alara?
No. I mean, it does work. You don't need it there because you can attack with the first thing, but what is the like Tezzerator, you use this and the guy that can sack three artifacts to put Blightsteel Colossus in play.
Right, right.
So you have that in play, you play that guy, give it haste.
Kadotha
Forge Master. You play Kadotha Forge Master, give it haste, sack three artifacts, including maybe even itself, bring in Blightsteel, equip it to Blightsteel and win. So it's like a turn five auto kill. It's just, and turn four, because you're probably playing mana ramp, it's just kind of loose.
Isn't that horrible to like Path to Exile and Cryptic Command?
Great, exactly.
Path just exiles Blightsteel Colossus and then Cryptic Command.
There's
just
a reason
bounces.
I don't play this deck.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of loose. I feel like games two and three, it does not fare very well.
But. This is the deck I would imagine that Lightning Greaves is the most powerful. Right. It does like the most unfair thing.
Josh's number six was Mind's Eye, which
that's you play, you draw
it's
a card,
five drop, and
you,
gain
a life
you get to pay one mana every time an opponent draws a card.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you can draw a card as well.
It is Lightning Greaves should be noted is very good if you've ever tried to build the Pili Pala Grand Architect. Well, only because on turn three, Architect casts it off of himself. And then equips to himself. So then you don't remove him. And then with Pili Pala's ability, even though it's an untap ability to generate the mana, you can give him haste to then attack and have the untap ability to turn. So it speeds up both of your creatures and protects both pieces of your combo. So it is relevant in that sense. I've seen people try to build that deck.
Right, right. People.
Myself.
Right, won't go next. They aren't Ben Bateman.
So moving on.
We're talking about the royal we here. All
right,
number
right.
five. Ben, let's start with you because it seems like Alex Kessler has been stealing your thunder.
Yeah.
Well, just a little bit. So
get out of here, Thunder Stealer.
He was mad that Spellskite was my number six.
I just
so
can't believe
my
it.
Number five.
Well, maybe some other people will be mad too. Tweet at us at the MMcast. All right, Ben, what's your number five?
My number five is a card that actually was in the original Hunted Handsome list, and we'll get there. Engineered Explosives.
Engineered Explosives. Now, I don't think many people know exactly what this does. It was reprinted in Modern Masters. It's an X-drop artifact with Sunburst, so it enters the battlefield with a charge counter for each color of mana spent to cast it. In Modern Masters, this would be like your Trump to the Domain's five-color deck. You can pay two mana to sacrifice Engineered Explosives, destroy each non-land permanent with converted mana cost equal to the number of charge counters on Engineered Explosives.
So this is objectively... Not objectively. This is subjectively one of my favorite cards, probably of all time.
It can be searched
list,
for with Teleria West,
yes,
for the record.
And Trinket Mage.
And Trinket Mage.
My
yeah,
favorite big toolbox. And it's like the reason you do toolbox. Plus, you can recycle it with Academy Ruins. A friend of the podcast, Eric Whiteats, we were just talking, and he asked what my favorite Magic card was. And it's probably Academy Ruins, which can recycle engineers, it just locks out decks. It's one of the soft locks of the format.
Right.
I have taken this combo to a PTQ multiple times. I think one of my best finishes was off of the back of a Tolaria West into Academy Ruins into Engineered Explosives deck.
Yep.
And it's not on my list just because it's not played by anything. It's really powerful.
It just doesn't see a lot of play. That interaction is played in Hunted Handsome, for the record. It was in the old version. So when you say anything, what do you mean exactly? That is my number five.
A deck that has won a tournament.
Yeah.
From FNM above.
I will talk about Engineered Explosives really quickly, why I like it so much and why it's good. EE, as it's often referred to, is great at killing tokens, first of all, which is one of the important uses.
Two mana, kill all tokens.
Yeah, you can play for zero. It's great against any kind of, like, we talked about Soul Sisters last week. Any of these decks that try to overrun you with one and two drops.
This is another deck that's good against Noggles because all their cards are one drops.
Yeah, exactly. It's against decks that have redundant, like sort of swarm strategies in their permanents, where it's like similar casting costs, you can very often get like a 2 or a 3-for-1 out of it.
Right.
And it is cheap, so you can search for it with an Academy, like we said, Tolaria West with Trinket Mage. You can recycle it with Academy Ruins. It creates interesting situations, and it's kind of a card that I think people don't see coming very often.
I think it actually probably could see a lot more play in the format.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, 2 mana to kill all tokens. 3 mana to kill, which includes Batter Skull Germs. 3 mana to kill all 1-drops, which is very strong. 4 mana to kill all 2-drops, which is even stronger. Like, there are many relevant uses up to
super
those.
Super good against Merfolk.
Right. Super good against Merfolk. Super good against Delver now, if you think about it. I mean, it's a little mana intensive, and countering is always a problem. But, like, on 1 mana, you kill their Delver. On 0 mana, you can kill all of their 1-1s. And on 2 mana, you kill Pyromancer.
Yeah.
It's
good. The tokens thing I think is probably more often than not in a format like this where you'd see the use.
Right.
Just because
there's so many, you know, the deck is the format of Modern is so streamlined to being so much about 1, 2, and 3 drops that it's powerful there. I actually play this card in Legacy main deck because I play Miracles, but I play a weird enchantment artifact tutoring miracle deck.
Does it play Trinket Mage?
Does not, but it does play for Enlightened Tutors.
Ah, okay.
So that's how it goes.
I wish you were playing Trinket Mage in Legacy.
Well, it's
I would have made made fun of you. But
right. I thought about it.
Your number five?
My number five is Darksteel Citadel.
Nice. It is an indestructible land that adds 1 colorless.
Ben
mana.
Is dying.
Darksteel Citadel, a freaking colorless artifact land.
Hey, it doesn't come into play tapped.
There are 20 cards on this list right now. Darksteel Citadel is not even on it. I pulled it. It's in my sideboard like options. It's like card number 34 or something like that.
So it's a two-sided thing. One of them is the fact that this card I'm using as a representative of, like, the only vestige of a banned list set, that, like, this is the only card that's legal of, like, 5 cards that are all very powerful.
Yes.
Not to mention, it's the only real soul land in the entire format of Modern, really, other than maybe the Tron lands if you assemble the combo. Mm-hmm. It taps for 2 mana in Affinity. That's just blatantly what it's doing. Plus, it's the it's their new threat. It's, like, the 5/5 that gets attached
to
it.
Right. There is that.
It's an indestructible like, when you're playing Affinity, Darksteel Citadel has now become one of the most important cards in the deck because of the new enchantment, because it ramps them, because of all the, like, the 10 different things it does.
But does that make it number 5 out of the top 10?
Yeah, it's an artifact land. The artifact lands are one of the most powerful cards ever printed. This is just the only one we have available to us in Modern.
You basically looked at Modern and you were like, the one artifact deck in Modern that's really good is Affinity. So 3 of my top 10 cards are going to be cards that make Affinity good. That's
yes. Well, it, what comes down to it, there's really only 2 artifact decks in the format. Really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actual ones. There's Affinity and there's Tron.
Tron.
And if you look at your list and my list, most of the cards come, you could argue, come from both of those decks. And then there's like a few sideboard cards and like other ones. That's what Modern is right now. There's a few cards that aren't that. My number one definitively is neither of those decks.
Yes. I am so curious what your number one is because I wonder if it's even on my list.
It's possible it's not, and I have an idea why it wouldn't be,
which is like a weird loose reason.
Cute. You guys
we'll
know
get
each other
there.
So
I think I know
well.
It.
But yeah, Darksteel Citadel, number 5.
Nice.
It's an artifact land. This is one of the most powerful cards ever printed.
Yeah, nothing new from the EDH side.
Your unassuming looks here. He's looking, he's rolling his eyes. This is how artifact lands got printed in the first place. Which is like, how bad could they be? Who cares?
No one knew. Moving on to number 4, my list was exhausted on this one. So let's see what you guys got here.
Number 4, we talked about Batterskull.
Your
number 4?
Yeah.
Batterskull. My number 4 is Vidalcan Shackles.
My number 4 is Batterskull again. It's just that good. Vidalkin Shackles just drafted this sucker in Modern Masters, and it was a blowout. I'm serious. It was great. The guy tried to put in his suspended giant that makes everything tap down if it's not white.
Right, right.
I stole it, tapped everything that he had down because he just had red giants, and then I swung for like 12.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Yeah, yeah.
It's really good.
Vidalkin Shackles is a 3-drop artifact. It's... You may choose not to untap it during your untap step, and for 2 mana, you can tap it to gain control of target creature with power less than or equal to the number of islands you control for as long as Vidalkin Shackles remains tapped.
So
you can steal stuff. If for my case, you steal stuff, you force it to chump block their stuff,
well, this,
and then
this
you
card
steal
is
something
one,
else the next turn.
Made it at least multiple Pro Tour top eights. This mm-hmm. is a classic, very strong card.
So the reason that this card, and I would say the first thing that when I think about this card that I realize is that the concept of this card is great. Playing with this card in reality is super difficult to do correctly because you...
It's 5 mana to get it down and activate.
Yeah, and also, like, there are...
You might not have enough islands.
Yeah, and you also have to think about, like, do I untap it and wait for attack to steal their creature? Do I... Like, there's... You have to really plan
really
out...
really tricky things you can do with it that it seems unassuming at first, but you don't mm-hmm. realize, like, oh, I can steal that land that they might attack with, and then...
Yeah, and it turns back, and they don't get it back. I mean, it's a very difficult card to play correctly, and it's one of the cards that definitely slows the game down during combat where you... Like, your decision tree gets, like, a little bit obnoxious.
Right. Yeah, you enter the tank.
Yeah, it's just a very, very powerful card. The reasons that I gravitate towards this card... blue is the best color in Magic, in my opinion. So true. Playing a lot of blue right. when you don't have to complicate your mana base is great. And this card is awesome.
Yep. Synergy there.
Right. Blood Moon historically has been one of the best cards in Magic. So,
it was on our top 10 red lists.
Yeah. And you can house a lot of decks with that card. This deck will never lose to Blood Moon. Right. Or this card won't be in a deck that will lose to Blood Moon.
The main deck that plays this deck is... Blue Moon.
Yeah, which plays
is
Blood Moon.
Blood Moon and Vidalkin Shackles, is its game plan.
Yeah. So that's really powerful. And then on top of that, I mean, it's just really difficult for the player if you're in any way ahead or you have like instant speed interactive spells for them to get around it because all of a sudden you're dictating how the game works. You're dictating how combat's gonna work.
Right. This Blue Moon deck, how do I get a hold of this deck?
It was in the top 8 of GP Pro Tour Gatecrash.
Sounds
Born like... of the Gods. Born of the Gods. Sorry, I'm
sounds
so
like, sounds like back. Sounds like my intro to the format would be the Blue Moon deck.
We had Andrew Brown on the podcast recently, and Andrew Brown's like grinding right now to like try to get to that next like
right.
Yeah, I mean he's almost there. He's literally
like, especially in the playgroup.
Yeah,
like you've met some of our friends like Eugene, mm-hmm. where like a significant amount of people in his playgroup have now made it to Pro Tours.
All recently. He's like right there. So like Andrew is definitely, he's been like the tip of the spear. He's been the guy who's like leading that group for a long time. And I always come to Andrew.
Always a bridesmaid, never a
bride. I always come to Andrew and I'm always like, Andrew, I have this sweet new Modern Brew. And he'll be like, it used to be a joke. Now he just laughs. And he's like, do you have it with you? I'm like, no, it's in my head. but like, so one of my favorite Modern Brews, and I've mentioned this on here before, was the idea that you would curve Grand Architect into Master of Waves, right? We've talked about this before because
that was the first brew episode we did.
Right. Yeah, and we thought it was awesome. And I built the deck, and then I was like, you know what? It's mono blue. I'm just going to throw Blood Moon in. Why not? Like,
and that's just the only good card.
I'll just play 3 Blood Moons in the deck. And Andrew was like, they thought it was so funny. I brought it to like a testing night when I played it. It like won a couple games. That every game that won was just off Blood Moon. Right. It didn't win any games that I didn't draw Blood Moon. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, here we are like three months.
So back to Vidalkin Shackles.
Well, 3 months later, it ends up top 8 Pro Tour. I was like, oh, okay. I'm the idiot.
So the reason I didn't include Vidalkin Shackles on my list, it's not on my list, is 2 reasons. One, and this is...
Because you included Darksteel Citadel instead.
One, because it's kind of a blue card. Kind of.
It's an artifact.
Let's not talk about... All
right,
fine.
Right, right, right.
Hold
that
point stand. Keep going, Kessler.
But more the actual reason, and that's like a looser reason, the real reason is because you told me you were going to put it on your list. And I was like, I don't want to... let's limit the amount of doubles. I was like, I know he's going to put it there.
That was the only card I mentioned.
Like, on the board, he's like, of course you're going to both have, like, you know, Vidalkin Shackles.
That's
like,
Ben's going to
include
reason.
That.
that's why Josh and I didn't do that, and we ended up... overlapping on a bunch, but it also means that we are kind of...
Well, I cheated.
You know,
I'm a cheater.
You are a little bit of a cheater.
I like that your justification for Darksteel Citadel is that it's related to a cycle of cards that are not legal in Modern, so it's powerful.
Well, no, but it's still, like, yes, my point is that's, like, some of the prestige that it comes with, but it is one of the most powerful cards in the deck it's in, which is the most powerful artifact deck in the format.
There. Mm-hmm. Moving on.
Moving on.
Number 4 for EDH players, I put Duplicate down here.
I actually looked at Duplicant. It's probably in my larger amount of cards. It sees more Legacy play, oddly enough, than Modern, because the Soul Lands are in Legacy.
Yeah.
So Mud plays it.
And it's also a 6-drop. I can't see a game cast.
Well, Batterskull sees play. I mean, the fact that it removes a creature and you can also, like, let it come in and then eat. Like, it's also more relevant because Show and Tell is in Legacy.
So, right.
Like,
Eat Emrakul.
Show and Tell, I eat your Emrakul. Great. Ha-ha.
Yeah.
So number three. We're now in the top three.
Top
These are
three.
The three most.
Guys, we did cut to top eight. Now we're cut to
so,
top four.
You guys already know my one and my three.
Well, what's your three?
My three was Wyrmcoil, and my one was Spellskite.
Well, don't talk about one yet. Yeah, okay, three. Right. Okay, Wyrmcoil. So mine is going to get maybe the same reaction as the cards. Mox Opal.
Mox Opal.
Come on!
Mox Opal is a 0-drop legendary artifact with Metalcraft. Tap it to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Activate this ability only if you control three or more artifacts.
Right, so this is A, one of the most expensive cards in the format. B, yes. It is also a mox. Three, moxes are inherently more powerful than almost any other. Like, that is the most powerful artifacts, and not even just on pedigree. Like, Mox Opal itself.
What about Jack and the Mox?
Any artifact deck is playing it. Even if you're, like, brewing Tezzerator lists, you play four Mox Opal is, like, where you start with that deck. The reason I haven't actually done Tezzerator is because I sold my Mox Opals a while back, because the guy just made like $100 on like these cards and just got rid of them.
You can't play Mox Opal in any deck other than a deck that's going to take advantage of it on like the first turn or two of the game, which is like a heavily dedicated artifact deck. It has no flexibility whatsoever. It's not good like the other Moxes are good. It's only good in the deck that plays Darksteel Citadel. And
on the objective, just pure power level, it's extremely powerful. What it does is extremely powerful. B, the decks that do play it are dominant decks in Modern. Right now, maybe not because we're in combo hell, but like generally Affinity is one of the major pillars of this format.
There's no way in any possible universe that you could convince me that Mox Opal is more powerful than Spellskite. That's crazy. That's bananas.
I'm glad that we're inspiring discussion. Hopefully this inspires you guys to discuss as well. Tweet at us at the MMS.
Okay, so in a vacuum, my deck has Spellskite in it. I play it. It does nothing. In a vacuum, I have Mox Opal in it. My deck is built to use Mox Opal. I play it, and then I win the next turn.
I disagree. You're forgetting about the fact that Mox Opal does absolutely nothing against any of the decks that are trying to beat you, whereas Spellskite stops
but
like 70% of them.
First, Affinity's all about punching him in the face.
I think that you're focusing on power of these cards. Within
moving on to the top PDH number three card, Perilous Vault made it for me, and Nevermore's Disc for Josh. So just board wipes.
Yeah,
both different.
On that note, something that is or was on my, and I actually took it off on my honorable mentions, but is a similar vein, is Oblivion Stone. So, you know, very similar. That's he's playing Modern. That is the board wipe, or the secondary board wipe. The main board wipe out of Blue Tron and the secondary board wipe out of Green Red ones.
Oblivion Stone allows you to put fate counters on permanents, and then you can sacrifice it, and everything without a fate counter on it just goes bye-bye.
It's very similar to the card you just mentioned.
Yes, it is similar to
the Tomb Crypt wipe vault thing.
No, Perilous Vault?
Yeah.
No, Perilous Vault's different. Perilous Vault was in M15.
Yeah,
Perilous.
but it's an artifact that comes into play, and then for mana, you can tap it to kill everything.
Correct.
Yeah, and Nevermile's Dick's the same thing. All three kind of do a very similar thing.
Yeah.
This is kind of the Modern version. In Standard, we have Perilous Vault. In EDH, you have Nevermile's Disc. In Modern, you have...
I'm just going to clarify, it's Nevernal's Disc?
Nevernal's
Disc?
I think
See, I liked Perilous Vault in EDH better because it exiles everything.
Sure.
So it does get, you know, unless you need Graveyard
right.
as well.
So number two, and just, Ben, you go.
Number two is Birthing Pod.
Okay.
Birthing Pod. A very good card.
So that's
a staple.
That's number one?
That's my number one.
It was almost number
one.
By the way,
which you said, I think he said something about, like,
but Spellskite's better.
You didn't like another card because it had a color in it. And I was like, look at your number one. It's Birthing Pod.
Right, but the point is that you have to play all islands for the first one to play. Birthing
Shackles.
Pod, like, mind you, it gets played in green decks because the best cards of the Birthing Pod away are green cards, but it's not like a necessary factor.
Right.
So, it just hurts really bad.
I'm going to apologize to our listeners right now and just say, I'm not going to argue that Spellskite is better than Birthing Pod. Birthing Pod's a better card than Spellskite, but Spellskite sees...
No, when you're saying, like, Birthing Pod... I thought you didn't include it in your list because it was green. That was what I was assuming when you said Spellskite's your number one, because, like, there's no way Birthing Pod is not the best artifact in the format.
Birthing Pod is 3-1 green Phyrexian mana, so you can play it again with either 1 force or 2 life, and for 1 and a Phyrexian green mana, you can tap it to sack a creature, and you essentially get another creature with a converted mana cost that's 1 more than the one you just sacrificed. And you essentially, you can only do it as a sorcery, but it just lets you level up your creatures to the next CMC level.
Right. Well, and the decks that play it, we've talked about them. They're all about value. All their creatures either die or come to the play with value. And, like, it is the pillar of the format, I almost want to say. Like, it is one of the, like, if not the defining card, one of the four main defining cards of the modern format since it started seeing play.
Very powerful.
It's surviving in a format that everyone thought it would be bad in. Everyone thought it would be bad in this. Delver Combo Intern is still one of the top tier decks.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, a ridiculously
it's just a very good
card.
Like, it's the card that it before recently was the closest card to people considering an actual banning for.
Oh, interesting.
It's super, super, super hard to fight with narrow, like, removal strategies. Like, if you don't
have... Another removal can deal with it. Like, Path is maybe the only one that's very good. Like, Lightning Bolt kills... All the creatures come with value, so it's not very good. Abrupt Decay can't kill Birthing Pod, so it goes out the window. Like, there's nothing that really handles it. The decks that play are just very strong in general. Like, it is one of the defining cards of the format.
Yeah, it's better than Spellskite. But Spellskite, I still
so can
contend...
So pretend Spellskite is your number two so I can get to my number two?
Well,
no.
I guess it's number two.
I know what your number two is.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier, but we haven't really talked about it.
Yeah, all right, good.
It's Cranial Plating.
Right.
Cranial
Plating. Another card that's only good in Affinity.
Two-drop artifact equipment from Darksteel, correct? No, Fifth Dawn.
I tried really hard, by the way, to not include
Let
too many Affinity
cards.
Let me read
the card, Kessler.
You put four in your top ten.
Equipped creature gets +1/+0 for each artifact you control. So again, a very artifact-heavy strategy to make this guy work. And for two black, you can attach it to target creature you control. And also has an equip cost of one. So you can equip it as a sorcery for one or pay one extra specifically in black, two black total, sorry, and you can do it at instant speed.
Right, which is the least relevant ability. I mean, it is relevant once in a while, but it's generally the least played. The thing that, you know, if Arcbound Ravager is the face of the deck, if Darksteel Citadel is the castle that this deck lives in, this is the crown jewel, this is what makes the deck as powerful as it is.
What's your number one card, Memnite?
No. It was Ornithopter was so close.
It was so close, guys, because you can ensoul it and then it becomes
it's zero.
Like a
it's a free creature that flies.
It's like a flyer. It's awesome.
I mean, this card is obviously powerful. You put on any evasive creature, it ends the game in two hits. Mm-hmm. If it's slow.
Right.
If it's a slow draw. Right. I mean, in concert with the other cards we've mentioned, it's very, very strong. In defense of the reason there are so many Affinity cards on this list, Affinity is the major defining archetype that uses our
This is true. This is true.
Almost every other card we mentioned, other than maybe the Tron cards, which isn't like is a tier two deck really in the format, all the other cards are, you know, sideboard cards or role players or kind of fit in decks for like not the main game plan, but like Affinity is the deck that we are artifacts. We are here. We are the March of the Machines. Goodbye. You're done. You're dead. And like, many of these cards were ban-worthy in Standard. This is a deck that was banned. Many cards were banned in Standard. Many cards are banned right now in Modern to make the deck weaker. These are obviously very powerful cards. And yes, in a vacuum, Cranial Plating in a deck that doesn't have any artifacts isn't going to be good. But it's so much more powerful than other artifacts when it's doing what it's supposed to that it's so high on my list.
I definitely, when I was making my list, I looked at Ravager and I looked at Plating. And I have them connected on my, like, they were number six, like, slash in the same way that I had the first two cards. And I won't say in any way that, like, I'm against Cranial Plating in the same way that I am against Darksteel Citadel. Like, I totally, to me, they're, like, different conversations. Like Citadel and Mox Opal are, like, engine cards. This is the card that ends the game.
Right.
So that I'll give you credit for. I was a little shy about putting too many Affinity cards in a list of 10, where I really wanted to talk about cards that I think are super powerful and maybe don't see as much play.
And I knew you would do that, so I was like, I'm going to actually pick the most powerful cards in the format.
But, I'll give you that. So have we talked about Spellskite yet? It's been...
Well, yeah, so what was your number two before we start talking about the
number
two?
So for one thing, we didn't have Birthing Pod on there because EDH rules do not allow you to play this just in any deck.
Right.
Really? So
because
it has green in the actual text.
Oh.
Yeah, so the way EDH works is you can only play cards that are in your commander's color value, whatever it's called. And so if you're not playing green, you can't play.
One of the only exceptions to this is Extort. Because the extort cost, it doesn't tie it to a color. It just
well, no.
It,
there's
out.
Other cards. It's reminder. It's
reminder text.
It's reminder text is what matters. So like, I mean, I don't want to get too much of this in this podcast, but yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. So our number two was Scroll Rack, which is just for a commander. It's one of the best ways to just either protect stuff or get more things in your hand. And for me, Lightning Grease was Josh's. Yeah. So,
okay.
So we've covered our number two.
All right. So number one. We've said it. Spellskite and Birthing Pod. Obviously, Birthing Pod is like the best artifact in the format by
Yeah.
And, like, it's your number two because spell, like, I love your enthusiasm for Spell Skype. I also
we
have
love
a
your
fondness
enthusiasm
for Spell Skype.
For Darksteel Citadel.
It's the best land ever printed. No, it's not the best land ever
printed. In standard, when Spell Skype was printed, I went to a PTQ in San Diego, and I needed Spell Skypes that morning. I think the deck I was playing was that was the Soul Sisters PTQ.
Right.
And they were – everybody wanted them because it was, like, you know, just come out. And I think they were, like, $12 or $13.
Oh, yeah.
And
I could be spec'd on these guys. Like, I still have my original copies, but, like, yeah.
I traded a Sword of Light and Shadow for 2 Spell Skypes because this guy was just, like, I'm not giving it to anything less. And I
wow.
Like, yeah. It was a huge bummer.
But, well, I mean – you came out on top, I think.
Yeah.
In the end.
Yeah.
But
Spell Skites are, it's, I mean, yeah.
Spell Skites are now worth
17 about
17-ish.
Each, yeah.
But they were selling, I mean, they were selling.
A sword is worth, I think, around 17
no,
right
it's
now.
20, 21 to 24. Okay.
But they were selling Spell Skites
out
the gate, like at the beginning of the day, tables were selling for 4. But by the end of the day, they had raised them to 11 because they were totally sold out.
Oh, the good old days.
Yeah, I mean, both Spell Skites, he's playing everything. Birthing Pod is
doesn't see enough, like, play as far as I'm concerned.
Right. You know, Birthing Pod is the crown of 2 different decks. It's the main, you know, like, there are 2 major decks in the format, really kind of even 3. It's a, and that's just the decks that have been found. Birthing Pod is one of those cards that, like, will forever be something Wizards has to be worried about when printing new cards.
Right.
It's the card that is on the list of possibly being banned. And then Spellskite is one of the major valves of the format. It's one of the cards that majorly lets you protect yourself against specific strategies.
In the way we always talk about bannings, that when you look at a deck and you're going to ban a card, you ban the engine, you ban the card that doesn't really affect the rest of the format. So if they do print a card in the future that makes Birthing Pod beyond like the kind of level of unfair it is now, it would be Spellskite that would be the card that would go. Mm-hmm. It would not be that they wouldn't just, like,
Spellskite?
Print. I'm sorry, Birthing Pod. Spellskite is an unfair card.
You know, ban Spellskite. It's too powerful.
Look, I hate to do it to you, Spellskite, but
sorry, buddy. You gotta go. And he's like, no, redirect to someone else. No, that's not coming to me. Banned.
What's the number 1 commander card?
For me, it was Chromatic Lantern.
Oh, yeah. Great card.
I just think it's just like,
mana
it's
fixing
the,
is
you
good.
You gotta have the fixing.
Right.
You're never unhappy to have that in your opening hand. And Josh's was Solemn Simulacrum. Which I think is also
that was
really
that was
fun.
On my honorable mentions list.
Yeah, it's a 3-for-1.
Solemn is considered one of the best artifacts ever. It's just not great. It's
in
never
modern,
seen a lot of play in modern.
Right,
mono
exactly.
Blue
for,
Tron decks, maybe.
I did notice, like, when I was going through the database by casting cost and I was looking at every card, as soon as I hit 4 mana, it all of a sudden, like, almost none of the cards were on the list anymore. And
right.
5, like, I don't think there's a single 5 drop other than Batterskull, like, and like 6 set, like, there's nothing.
No, it was like 4 drops. Maybe Solemn was noticeable.
Yeah,
and then,
exactly.
And Birthing Pod. And then 5 drops Batterskull, 6 drops Wurmcoil Engine. And then.
So
honorable mentions.
Do you want to, like, I don't want to talk at length. Like, how you guys want to
just.
I said just do a couple, just like 3. I have 3. And we mentioned
and 2 of them have been talked about.
Yeah. So actually, the only one on my honorable mentions list that we actually didn't talk about is the Sword Cycle.
That's on my list as well.
So, like,
the
Sword of Feast and Famine, Sword of War and Peace,
Light
Sword
and
of Light and Shadow,
yeah.
Fire and Ice. These are the swords that they give a creature protection from
two
enemy colors. They give it +2/+2, and they, when you attack, you get an ability from each of the colors that gets
combat
protection.
Damage.
As long as
combat
damage.
Yeah.
They're all amazing, and they're all amazing in EDH too. So those were on our honorable.
We were trying to figure out what we thought the best sword was for modern, and it's definitely. I mean,
I think it's color dependent. If you're playing blue, I think it's black green personally, because you have the ability to hold up counter magic always and still play threats.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like Light and Shadow the most.
I think
Light and Shadow's really
good. Light and Shadow's very good for value purposes, and I think Fire and Ice is just objectively the most powerful in all decks that aren't playing blue.
But what about the one that makes you mill?
There's three good swords and 2 mediocre swords. It's basically the way
when it comes down to it, actually. No. The green blue one, for a while, and might still be true, I don't think right now, is the best one in Legacy. Because it fights Jace and Tarmogoyf. Which are, like, who cares about... And milling in 60-card decks in Legacy, there's only, like, 2 decks that really matters for. Mm-hmm. So, like, being able to go around Tarmogoyf and Jace is extremely important.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. So the Sword Cycle. Another card that was on my list that we didn't include was Etherswarn Canonist.
The reason I didn't include that is just there are better cards now that aren't artifacts anymore. Like, there's the 1/4 that does kind of what it does anyway. The Rule of Law 1/4. Players can only play 1 card per turn. And it's a 1/4 and just is better than Etherswarn Canonist.
But it costs more than 2.
It costs 3.
Right.
But it doesn't die to Lightning Bolt. So the 1 extra mana for not dying to Lightning Bolt is just better.
I mean, I think within this cycle of, like, and the other cards that sort of are related would be, like, Thorn of Amethyst and, like, Lodestone Golem.
Right,
and they're
all
kind of, they're all kind of, like, they don't see a lot of play. Like, you could try to build around them. I don't know. Another one for me was Expedition Map.
I had Expedition Map on my, like, didn't even make it. But, like, it's definitely very strong. It's one of the Tron staples. It just...
Yeah. It's super notable because there's not a lot of cards in Magic's history. We talked about this with Scapeshift, but, like, most cards that search for lands, historically, all get basics.
Specifically land, not basic lands. Yeah.
Yeah. Almost, there's, like, three or four. There's, like, Sylvan Scrying. There's, like, Expedition Map, Scapeshift. Weathered Wayfarer.
There's a few.
There's like a couple.
Yeah.
So it's whenever you like have one of those cards.
The Reliquary.
Come
on. Yeah. Definitely.
Another one.
Killer's Invitational card.
Yeah, it's good. Another one for you.
It's.
Do you have any other?
No, those are that was my end of my list.
Jimmy, any?
We had Phryxian Metamorph.
Yeah,
it's
my list as well.
That's out there. Good.
But we also didn't put it on for the same reasons, Birthing Pod. And then we had Mimic Vat, Doubling Cube, the Medallion Cycle, Torporb.
Torporb is on my notable honorables.
Yeah. There's a lot of really, like, the thing to really know, utility, and I kind of wrap up, I don't know if I should just finish that, but, like, there are so many powerful sideboard artifacts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's more, like, Chalice of the Void.
That's the last one.
Where, like, there are all these cards that are very good from the sideboard that, you know, that's kind of where artifacts kind of live in Modern. And even really Legacy, like, there are, you know, Legacy, there's Mud. In Modern, there's Tron. In Legacy, there's Affinity. In Modern, there's Affinity. Like, that's kind of where most of the artifacts live. It's not like Vintage, where you have these super overpowered artifacts that are just balls to the walls better than anything in the format.
Yep.
So that covers our top 10 artifacts section. I really am curious to know if you guys think that Spellskite's as good as I do, and your other thoughts in general on the lists.
All right, so... Before we get into the deck tech, we got some favorite artifact cards from our fans and friends on Twitter. So I'm going to shout out some of them. The one that, you know, we called out, we've talked about it, Batterskull was brought by Vincent T at Visfor, V-I-S-F-O-R, Vincent. He said Batterskull. I agree.
That's his favorite.
Yeah, Vincent. I feel like that's obviously
super
one of the best
cards out
there.
Great card, yeah. Super 100%.
Top awesome. Deck Mage at Top Deck Mage, Darksteel Colossus.
I had Blightsteel as one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah, I think it's a combo piece, but I also think right now it's just too weak to path.
Yeah.
I think the best, like,
agreed.
One of the three removal spells kills it. And lastly, Rum Titan at Mr. Blades. Ornithopter, one of my favorite cards.
Almost put it as your number one card.
Oh, yeah, almost number one.
Decided you just, you know, maybe not favor affinity cards too heavily on this
right,
list.
Right, exactly. It was just going to be an affinity list. I was just going to write out all the cards in the deck.
Just list Cranial Plating
right.
10 times.
Yeah, 10 times.
So we are going to do a deck tech right now. And we are going to do a deck tech on an awesome
brew.
Deck.
To open up the new year, we're going to be doing Brew
yeah.
10.
So this is going to be kind of an interesting deck tech because basically this deck existed before the legend rule change. The original version of this deck, the deck that actually got taken to a PTQ with a full 15-card sideboard, the whole deal, and I was competitively testing. The newer version of this deck we are working on now, and there's a pretty solid outline for what we have right now, and we will talk about that as well. So I think we should probably first talk about the idea for where it came from. So the concept for this deck originally came from trying to take advantage of the hunted creature cycle. And the hunted creatures were creatures that came out of Ravnica, where they were cheap, somewhat. Their casting costs were cheap, and they had strong effect creatures, and they would give your opponent some number of tokens. So,
right. Free blockers, as it were.
Well, yes.
This is what, you know, why it's called the hunted part of Hunted Handsome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the handsome thing actually has nothing to do with the deck. My nickname in the Magic community was Handsome Ben, which was the only reason, and somebody suggested I call it Hunted Handsome, and who was I to object?
So Hunted Horror, the main card, I guess, is Hunted Horror.
Yes.
It's 2 black for a 7/7. You're like, whoa, hold up.
Trample.
When it comes into the play. When Hunted Horror comes into play, put 2/3/3 green centaur green creature tokens with protection from black into play under target opponent's control.
So the way that they designed these creatures was essentially they would get creatures whose power and toughness would, within the context of attacking and blocking, generally differ from yours by 1 point of damage. Mm-hmm. So with this creature, they could attack you for 6. You could attack them for 7. So you would always come ahead with 1 point of damage.
Right. Or they could just chump block you all day for free.
Yes, exactly. And you could still trample through for 1 damage. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the way they envisioned these creatures. The deck essentially plays this and the other hunted creature that is cheap, which is the hunted,
blue one.
Hunted Phantasm, which is 2 blue and 1 colorless for a 4/6 unblockable spirit. When it comes into play, they get 5/1/1 red goblin creature tokens. So the concept of the deck was if you played Leyline of Singularity, which makes all...
I mean, when it comes down to, you play cards that for very efficiently let you get rid of the tokens across the board.
Yes.
Leyland Singularity used to work because the Legend rule used to be different. You know, you also were playing Engineered Explosives,
yep.
which we talked about because it lets you get Fire rid of the tokens with value. Now that the rule has changed.
Yeah. It's a little harder to make this work. Obviously, them still having 1/3/3 is not as good as them having 0/3/3s if you have a ley line. It's just a little wonky. It played Deathrite Shaman back in the day. Deathrite's also banned, so the deck's totally different now. The newer version of the deck that I'm trying to play with now
is much more aristocrat-y.
Yeah, exactly. It's very aristocrat-y, and it is...
Quick question. Can you Torpor Orb against this and stop it from giving stuff?
Yeah.
But... yeah.
That was another one of the... That was another
one of the cards that was playing.
I'll mention that right now.
Like this deck.
Yeah. So another card that used to be included you could deal with was like you could try Ratchet Bomb as another version of essentially Engineered Explosives. You could try Torpor Orb to stop the ETB effects. The new version of the deck doesn't play... what?
Sundial of the Infinite.
Yeah, there was ways to try to do it, but most of them were do-nothing cards. Mm-hmm. The new version of the deck doesn't play the 7-7 anymore. And the reason it doesn't play the 7-7 is because you're trying to use Illness in the Ranks, which is an enchantment for one black that creature tokens get -1/-1.
Which is really relevant, token creatures.
Yeah.
And it's really relevant right now because of Delver lists and because, you know, young Pyromancer is around and they're just a bunch of 1/1 tokens. Mm-hmm. It's also good against Lingering Souls, so there's
It stops.
There's value you get. It also stops
Splinter Twin.
Splinter Twin, yeah, from comboing. Right. So it has value beyond just, I'm getting rid of the things I'm doing. It's like, oh, it also starts some of the most dangerous starts from other decks in the format.
So when I was designing the original version of this deck, the coolest interaction I thought was before I put Deathrite Shaman in the deck, my card advantage engine didn't get me a card, it got me a life swing. And I played 4 Blood Artist with Forbidden Orchard. So that essentially once I had a Blood Artist in play and I made 2 Orchard tokens, the Singularity would just blow the tokens up and I'd get a drain 2 every single time. And that was the grindy end the game engine if the deck sort of stalled out. The new version of the deck tries to completely take advantage of that.
Right, that's now the game plan.
So what you do is you play Blood Artist, you play the Hunted Phantasm because it gives them 5/1s. You play, I'm right now thinking 2 copies of Hunted Troll, which is the green hunted creature. It's an 8/4 troll for 2 green and 2 colorless that they get 4 1/1 flying fairies and it can regenerate for 1 green. You're playing the same thing as far as the Illness of the Ranks.
You're giving them stuff and then wiping their board.
That's the concept, right?
Gotcha. Would you also be playing, there's the white, I'm forgetting what it's called, but when a creature enters on your battlefield, you gain life, and when a creature enters on their side of the battlefield, they lose life.
Suture Priest. That's the other 2 drops. So you play 4 Blood Artist and 4 Suture Priest.
Right.
So
Suture Priest is 1 and a white for a 1/1. That whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain a life. So it's kind of a mini Soul Sister.
Yep.
Or a bigger Soul Sister. But it also has the ability, anytime a creature enters the battlefield on your opponent's side, they lose a life.
So your Forbidden Orchard gets even better, because not only do you get life when the creature dies, still in the ranks, they lose a life when it enters.
Right.
And, you know, it's the sort of thing you can curve Suture Priest into the 4/6 unblockable Phantasm, and they lose 5, and you gain 1 just by playing it.
Mm-hmm.
So the curve is really interesting, and the nice thing is there's a little more redundancy in this version of the deck.
It's less of a glass cannon that is depending on, like, a ley line of Singularity to do anything important.
And the nice thing about this deck is because you're anticipating gaining so much life between Blood Artist and Suture Priest, you can just play all the colors. So this deck, the version I'm playing right now plays 4 City of Brass, 4 Mana Confluence, 4 Forbidden Orchard, 4 Reflecting Pool. It's just, I'm going to play every card that I want to play.
All of the gold cards.
Yeah. So what we talked about...
the Blood Moon, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah. What we talked about was figuring out, other than Illness, which is a great card, what would be the best second effect? Because this time, I don't want to be trying to generate 2 creatures a turn with Forbidden Orchards and have to constantly engineer explosives.
Right, right.
And Fire Spout's no good because it's going to wipe my 1/1s. So you need a more consistent, better effect that consistently makes it so any creature on their side dies. The most recent thing we came up with was trying to utilize Elesh Norn with Unburial Rites, which is the classic Gifts Ungiven combo.
Right.
So for those of you who don't know, I'm going to let Jimmy read these cards real quick.
Sure. So Elesh Norn, we'll start with Unburial Rites, or Gifts Ungiven?
Yeah.
We do whatever we want. All right, so Gifts Ungiven is a historically very powerful card. 3 and a blue for an instant. Search your library for up to 4 cards with different names and reveal them. Target opponent chooses 2 of those cards. Put the chosen cards into your graveyard and the rest into your hand.
The second piece of this is that you Gifts Ungiven for, instead of 4 cards, two cards, one
you
of which
can
was
fail the find. So the way searching right. works is if you search your deck for something, you are never forced to find anything because there's no way to prove that it's in your deck without your opponent searching through it. So the fix for that is just, oh, if you don't find it, you don't find it. So even though your opponent can see that there are other cards in your deck physically, the way the rules are made is it allows you to just be like, oh, nope, there's only these two cards in my
right.
deck.
Yeah,
so, only two cards.
So you get to place Unburial Rites, which Jamie's going to read right now.
It's a 4 and a black sorcery. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, and you can also flash it back for 3 and a white, which is crazy because it's actually less. And the other card you're getting is Elesh Norn. One of them is going to hit the graveyard, and one of them is going to get to your hand, right?
Exactly. So you read Elesh Norn.
No, they both go to the graveyard. Elesh Norn and Unburial Rites go to your graveyard,
gotcha. So
and then you can
pop
flash Elesh back.
Out for 4 right. mana. And Elesh Norn is a 7-drop, 5 and 2 white for a 4/7 Praetor, legendary creature, Vigilant. Other creatures you control get +2/+2. Creatures your opponents control get -2/-2. So that's a board wipe for them immediately.
The other card in the place of Elesh Norn we're considering is Massacre Worm,
mm-hmm.
which is 3 black, 3 colorless.
When it hits the battlefield, all creatures get -2/-2.
Yeah,
it's your opponent's control.
Dies. They lose 2 life.
And the thing that's why that's so great is because it's like it's both parts of the combo on its own.
It's like
so
a combo kill right there.
When those creatures, you know, die, all the creatures you've given them, they're losing 2 per. So you might get 5, you might get like 5 creatures, 4 creatures, 8, 10, 12 life out of Massacre Worm hitting the table. It's a 6/5 as well.
Right. If you think about it, the way the curve would go, and it's a little loose, but you know, you're playing Forbidden Orchard, which puts 1/1s into play on your opponent's control. And if you're just, by turn 5, which is when you'd be reanimating it, you've already given them at least 4.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's 8 damage just out of nowhere. And that's
yeah.
if they haven't played a creature. That's if your other cards that are meant to put creatures into play under their control aren't in complete. So, like, 4 mana, get a 6/6 for 8 damage seems decent.
Yep.
Their life total, if you think about Modern as a format, that very likely their life total will be 17 starting because of a Shockland and a Fetchland.
Right.
So if you look at that, that's turn 1, and you play like this high number of like 1/1s for 2, it's more than likely you'll have beat in for 1 or 2 damage, or you'll have given them creatures. So
mm-hmm.
their life total will probably be somewhere floating right around that like 14, 15, 16 range off maybe a Blood Artist Drain or a Suture
right.
Priest. By the time you could get Massacre Worm or Elesh Norn in play, you may just win the game right there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost combo-ish. The other cards that we have considered, and I think the reason that we like this deck is because Gifts Ungiven gives you this ability that you can either get the combo, or if you're missing certain pieces of your engine, you can just gifts for value.
Right.
So you
like
can,
you can get, like, say there's you need a real board wipe.
Yeah.
You can get one of each of the 4 board wipes in the format, or 3
mm-hmm.
board wipes and a Snapcaster Mage to kind of like value it.
Exactly. So you play one Engineered Explosive still because it still can get rid of tokens and you can get it with Gift. You play Noxious Revival so that it's a green instant for 1 green Phyrexian mana. Put target creature from your graveyard on top of your library, which you can get with Gifts as one of your cards. So if they put something you need in the graveyard, you can
mm-hmm.
just put it on top. You play Academy Ruins, so you can try to loop Engineered Explosives if you have to. There's a lot of kind of grindy mid-game in this deck. Hissing Iguanar and Bloodseeker become second copies of Suture Priest's ability.
Right.
You can get Forbidden Orchard. You can get a copy of Vesuva if you need a second Forbidden Orchard. There's just a lot of things you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't tested the deck yet.
Right, this is in it. Well, Ben took this to GP San Diego, the older version, before the Legend Rule changed up. And then this is, and we've mentioned it before, and so this is kind of us wanting to, A, explain it to you guys so that you know what it is, so when we reference it in the
yeah.
future, because Ben will reference it. And B, you know, we've mentioned this before, we kind of want to bring a brew deck every 6 weeks or so kind of
yeah.
to the format and kind of go through it. And before we're done, we want to kind of bring it through what we think or how it would work against the Gauntlet. Now,
yeah.
obviously, this is untested, so this could be completely different, might be completely wrong. And it's possible that in the a couple weeks before now and us releasing this podcast, we'll test it a little bit more, and there will be a list below on rocketjump.com.
So really quickly, but just before we finish, I'm just going to rattle off a couple other cards that are in here or in the sort of the sideboard just so you guys know where our heads are at. A couple other cards that are included right now. You play 4 Inquisition of Kozilek, so you have something else to do on turn 1, just to be a little bit more disruptive. I have currently 1 copy of Reaper of the Wilds in the deck,
really?
Which is a 4/5 for 4 that is currently in standard because every time one of the creatures dies, you can scry one, digging you closer to your engine. It's also, if you need a threat, you can protect, just attack for the win. You can give it hexproof. We also are playing a couple copies of Izzet Charm so that if you draw one of these big creatures you don't want in your hand, you can loot. It's a counterspell. You guys
nice.
Know Izzet Charm. It's a good card. And beyond that, yeah, there's a handful of other cards that sort of do similar things. Altaq Bloodseeker is a weird card that I sort of toyed with in this list. Golgari Charm, Rakdos Charm are interesting.
I can see that card being much better than straight aggro build if you're really trying to go for it.
I love actually Golgari Charm in the list. Yeah. I think that's, I mean, I'm a big believer in charms. I think they're very powerful, and Golgari Charm does exactly what you need. It kills other 1/1s, but it also kills problematic artifacts and enchantments. It kills Birthing Pod, and if you can kill Birthing Pod, that's great.
Well, yeah, and Rakdos Charm is interesting for the same reason, because if they have 6/1s, you can make it
do
a six
damage.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, it also can sometimes just get
their graveyard as
Their graveyard, but Birthing Pod opponents. Not Birthing Pod. You can sometimes get Splinter Twin opponents. They go infinite, and you kill them at instant speed with the Black Rain.
Right, because you one day. So that's nice. You kind of get double value with Rakdos Charm if you get their guys and then kill them for more,
So, speaking of other decks that you play against, do you want to kind of get into
The Gauntlet? We can get into the Gauntlet here. All right,
So first, Blue-Red Delver, the big bad of the format.
Yeah, this is an interesting one against Blue-Red Delver, because you're going to take a lot of damage off your lands early, and if they counter the right spells, if they know what you're doing...
My fear here is their ability to kill Suture Priest and
Blood Artist,
because your main life gain engine, which if you start gaining the life, shuts them out, is very weak to Lightning Bolt.
Luckily, you play Illness in the Ranks in the main deck.
Right, which does help and does buy you time, because then you really only have to worry about Delver's Secrets and physical copies of Young Pyromancer, not the tokens it makes, but the actual body.
Yeah.
And maybe Snapcaster Mage.
I think the interesting thing you have here against them, and this is the reason we put it in the deck, honestly, if you exhaust their mana and their counter spells early by playing a bunch of things they think they need to get rid of, you really actually might just be able to resolve gifts into Elishnorn.
Right.
And if you resolve gifts into Elishnorn, they're probably going to lose.
They have no way to deal with that card.
So that's
the same reason that Siege Rhino is so good against them.
Yeah.
And why Birthing Pod is still good is because Siege Rhino was printed and junk, and that card is any toughness over 4.
Yeah.
Just it starts becoming a huge problem with them. And if you gain life off of value or you start wiping their board, it's just good. Same really even for the demon, where you'll wipe their board that one time, drain them for a bunch of life, and then have a 6/6 that they have to deal with.
Yeah, you might even want to consider, I suppose it's possible, Boseiju, right? That's the one that...
Allows you to play an instant or sorceries from your hand for an extra mana, and it cannot be countered.
Not one extra mana, you lose 2 life, but it doesn't...
Right. Yeah.
Just another way for you to lose life in your own deck, which is great. That's what we're trying to do.
That's what we're doing.
So that would be the first matchup. Birthing Pod... think you just lose. It's hard for me to imagine beating...
I think you have to combo them out. I think this is where Gifts is going to shine, and I think your sideboard plan probably needs to be a little tweaked towards Birthing Pod
Not
matchups.
To mention your surprise factor of this deck, I think, would get you...
The other thing, like,
game.
You probably run a couple Torpor Orbs on the side, and Torpor Orbs decent against Birthing Pod.
Yeah.
There's a lot of problems they have with that card. It doesn't stop their main combo win, but maybe you just have to kind of combo them out first and gain value over them.
It is interesting to think that because of the old version of this deck that played Hunted Horror, you actually... quite possibly could have a sideboard plan that almost switches into the old version, where if you are against the deck that is going to,
I don't know how good Hunted Horror, even the 2-drop one, is against Birthing Pod. What you really need to consider is how to beat them. And I think just you have a great sideboard plan because you have gifts. And so you're going to be very versatile against them. And stuff like Elishnorn is still great against Pod. Even Angel Pod, it's still going to be a brick wall for them.
It's quite possible that, your sideboard is going to include 5 or 6 cards that beef your gifts plan up and cut a lot of the redundant...
Well, plus you have tutorable board wipes, and there's definitely game plans you have against the deck.
So that's interesting.
Junk, kind of the same thing, but I think you're just better positioned. This is a deck that probably has a problem with inevitability, but decks that don't have that, you have a much better game plan against.
Yeah, I definitely agree. There's also another thing I've sort of thought about with this deck is that so many of the things that you're playing in the deck, that all your 1/1s, they're all cheap and kind of versatile. So you might be able to play one of those cards, like the new one, the 2 white and X. Return all creatures with converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Right, if you don't have too many spells. The other thing, I think the big win here is that they play Lingering Souls, and that's great for you.
Yeah, totally.
Burn, it depends how well this deck gains life. We don't know this for sure. Your lands are super painful, and if you can't get the life game plan going, it's going to be a huge problem. So I think Burn could be a problem, because they can just go quickly and beat you.
Right.
But I think that if you can mitigate your life total in some way, and maybe that's a reason not to play all of the colors, or play your colors a little less aggressively, it'll that's going to depend. That's going to define your matchup here.
Yeah, and that's honestly one of the most problematic things about the idea right now is that to get all everything you want out of this deck, you have to play too many colors.
Right.
And to do that, you're going to play these lands. So it may be we adjust the mana base and it's actually not as crazy as we think, and you can actually get that mana without taking as much damage, which would make the deck better. We're not really sure. We'll get there. Ascendancy is horrible. I think you just lose. You are playing four.
I think the thing with Ascendancy is that this card is not going to be legal in literally a month after us releasing this podcast.
Yeah.
It's 2 months away from right now. But like when this is coming out, the ban list announcement is soon.
Yeah.
And I think Ascendancy is a deck that if it doesn't get banned, huge problem. And this is another kind of like Birthing Pod. Just your sideboard plan has to be
super
for this.
Good. Yeah.
I think this is a thing that Golgari Charm you win a lot of value on.
Yeah.
I think being able to kill artifacts or enchantments is really important in this matchup. So that's helpful. And you just kind of goes out as it goes.
Yes, and the current list has 3 slots for Izzet Charm, which maybe just become other charms. We're not really sure. Ascendancy, also, it's noted, we're playing 4 copies of Inquisition in the main deck. If we can afford the life, you might want to play Dotsies instead, which you probably can't afford the life now. It's better against other combo decks, but you are able to get Ascendancy out of their hand.
Yeah, Inquisition is good because it gets rid of Ascendancy.
And the last list... go ahead.
Scapeshift. Last list.
Yeah, Inquisition's not good against that.
Well, I think the Scapeshift matchup is all about do you gain enough life and or do you kill him fast enough? If it's we have to test it, but I think it's possible this deck kills faster than Scapeshift does, and if it doesn't kill faster, then it definitely has the possibility to gain enough life to get out of range.
Agreed, yeah. And, I mean, some decks that aren't prepared and don't see it coming, you will just beat them with Massacre Worm. Just win.
Right.
And that's really an interesting... When we do test this, we need to kind of see quite how low you can get their life total.
Right.
Because if it's going to get them to 4, or it's going to get them to 6 on average, it's not worth it. But if you have that plan to get off on turn 5 and it just wins, then we've got ourselves a deck.
Right. So that's kind of it for the brew right now. Do you have anything else?
No. The thing I want, though, is because this is a work in progress, if you guys listen to this and you think it sounds like a cool idea or you want to talk about it, I come up with weird ideas and harass Kessler while he's working all the time and make him talk to me on the phone about them. So if you... You know, tweet at me.
Tweet at us. You can also comment on rocketdrops.com in the comments. Yes. We love getting comments there and encourage you to do so. And that's where the list will be posted. So you can kind of see the list and kind of throw your opinions out there and see how wrong or right we are with what we're trying to do here. Okay, so that's kind of it for today. You know, we want to thank Jimmy for coming, joining us.
You're very welcome.
Sorry that, you know, we didn't, I don't know, I have no apology.
Yeah, you shouldn't apologize to me. I had a nice time learning about more modern cards that I knew about, but not as well as I know now.
Right, and, you know, always remind you guys, and Jimmy can remind yourself, the command zone is a thing.
The command zone is
It would probably help you if you didn't write command cast on the breakdown every single week to get the name right.
All right, I'll do the plug. If you guys are interested in EDH, Elder Dragon, Highlander, or Commander, and you want to learn more about the game, or if you're just a straight spike and was like, what's the deal? Why do people play the silly stuff? Check out the command zone. It's our podcast. I hosted it with Josh Lee. Kwai has also been on this podcast. And I don't know, we take a semi-spiky approach to it. We definitely talk about ways to win and more specifically how to politic your way around the table and stuff. And we just had...
I think it's a good resource for people that classically don't like EDH because there are politic issues or the reasons they don't like it. You guys do a good job at addressing the reasons that someone that generally would be competitive may like EDH if they play this certain way or they're prepared to play this certain way.
Yeah, we just had BDM on and we've had Marshall from Limited Resources. So we've had a lot of good guests and a lot of good topics and a lot of good discussion. So check us out. We're also on the podcast page at rocketjump.com/podcasts.
So, you know, as always, you can follow all of us on Twitter. I am at Kess Wiley.
I am Ben Bateman Media on every single one of my social media platforms now. So Twitter and Instagram, Ben Bateman Media. Find me.
And I am at JF Wong on almost everything.
And, you know, we collectively are at the MMCast, though I hope you already knew that and have been tweeting us this whole time. Crazy,
yeah,
fun,
right.
Brew
ideas
are your favorite artifacts.
I hope you guys while you were listening to this in your car. Yeah. No, don't do that.
No, tweet while you're listening, just not while you're driving.
Yes, exactly.
Don't text and drive or tweet and drive.
Oh, and for the record, we talk about how awesome Video Game High School is every week. I watched it. It's great. I think that Jimmy's awesome, and that's so good.
I caught the shout out at the end of last week's episode, I think, and I was like, "Oh, you guys are making me warm and fuzzy on the inside." So
yeah,
all much the appreciated. Fuzzies.
Yeah, all the fuzzies.
I saw it on a Virgin America airplane flight.
Yeah, that will happen. Yeah. Pretty crazily so.
Really fun. So, yeah.
So yeah, that, you know, remember to comment below your Hunted Handsome ideas, tweet at us your favorite artifacts and brew ideas, and we'll see you guys next week.
If anybody starts a Twitter account at Hunted Handsome and you just tweet from it, I'll follow it, and I'll give you a playmat. I'll buy one.
The first person to get at Hunted Handsome gets a official playmat from the podcast.
Right now, I want a podcast.
If Jimmy does it, he doesn't get one though.
Oh man! All right, fine.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
See you guys.
Enjoy Fate Reforged spoilers, because we currently are waiting for them.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to themmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.